Hey, yo, what is a cypher?
A dynamite show.
You. The knowledge of the cypher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cypher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cypher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cypher. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This week, we bring you a special remixed and revamped version of episode 46, our talk with R&B legend Ron Isley. We've cleaned it up, made it more listenable, and added all the song clips you've now come to expect on the show. In case you've been under a rock since 1959 or so, Ron has been one of the most consistent hitmakers in popular music. From huge hits like Shout and Twist and Shout in the late 1950s and early 60s, to his recent collaborations with R. Kelly on songs like Contagious, Ron has always stayed interesting and relevant. In fact, making vital music in seven different decades is absolutely insane. We recorded this interview in the summer of 2013 at the offices of E1 Records in New York City. And now, here's our talk with Mr. Biggs himself, Ron Isley.
I'm here with, I use the word legendary a lot, but I wish there was a word that meant that plus to describe who I'm sitting here with. One of the greatest R&B singers of our time, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Ron Isley.
All right, thank you.
How are you?
I'm good, I'm real good.
Excellent. Well, we'll get to Dinner and Movie, your new song, your new record, in a minute. But I wanted to start way back at the beginning, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I know that, when you were starting out singing with your brothers, a lot of the gospel groups like the Dixie Hummingbirds and Billy Ward and stuff like that were some of your first influences. Which gospel singers in particular really knocked you out when you were growing up?
Growing up, Clara Ward.
How I got over.
Clara Ward, we patterned ourselves after her group. My mother, I was a little guy. So my mother, taught me all the songs. I had all the records, and we did our show, We put together a show, How I Got Over, and Surely God Is Able, all those songs, And we had a dynamite show.
Wow, was there dancing too, or?
No, with no dancing, just sang those songs, and everybody, just all the people at the church and everybody just loved it. It was wonderful.
And there's a whole generation of soul singers, a lot of whom you knew, I'm sure. I know you were good friends with Aretha Franklin and people who started out in the church and moved into pop.
You're right. We didn't meet. I met Aretha Franklin later, I think she was maybe 18 years old when we met. And I think it was, she did her first record with Clyde Davis.
Yeah.
I think we had out, we may have had our Twist and Shout, Shout and Twist and Shout.
Yeah.
And we were at somewhere in Brooklyn, a place called a Town Hill. And that's where we met, yeah.
And what did you learn singing gospel that you were able to bring across to pop?
Well, you learned the feeling, what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say we had the spirit of, especially in singing the gospel songs and so forth, we had the spirit that was like you were touched from God then, And it has went on and on and on all the way up into now. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of your early stuff, sort of pre-Tamla, people think, the Isley Brothers started doing jams in the 70s, but you were doing, you could think of it as jams in the 60s.
Our first hit record was Shout.
Yeah.
And that was 1959.
Yeah.
And that was gospel. You make me wanna shout.
Come on now, come on now.
Yeah, 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 ye
and you know, Beatles took off and, you know, copied our style, you know, and they did that song, and they were doing that song, Shout. And did the other song,
Twist and Shout. Mm-hmm.
When we went to England, yeah.
That's really incredible. And I wanted to ask you something else about that early era. I know your brother, Ernie, had a very interesting, almost like circular relationship with Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah?
He played with you. With so many young people, they don't understand. He learned from you, but then in turn was a big influence on your brother.
Well, yes.
What do you think he learned from playing with you?
He was very talented. He's very, very talented. One of the talented guitar players that we had. He learned a lot with us because we just toured all over, you know. You name it, we was there, you know. And in that time and that day, it was all fun, man. It was just, we made money, but it was fun, you know. Canada, Montreal, we went everywhere, you know, and did those songs, and we sang everybody's song. I See songs, and Junior Walker, Shotgun, Shooting Before You Run, and you know, everybody's song. Yeah. Chuck Berry and, you know, we sang it, Little Richard. Well, I told Sally she's built we should got
everything that I baby. Who was your favorite other than your own stuff to sing in those days?
We started off, we you know, Little Richard songs, Good Golly, Miss Molly. We could get the crowds going, you know, everybody would get up, dance, and, you know, jump all over the place. And then we would do Shotgun, which was another popular song, you know. And then we did some of our songs, you know. And we made up a show of all those tunes that everybody liked, you know, at the time. Do the Monkey Time. You know, we Do the Monkey. And what was some of the other dances? Do the Twist. Come on. You know, our show would have all that incorporated in it.
Yeah, you recorded a bunch of those. I know you recorded Let's Twist Again and all a bunch of things like that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Shotgun, which obviously is, you know, was put out by Motown, and you guys ended up working with Tamla.
Yeah, we went to Motown, we did This So Hard of Mine. And we did several other songs that were big hits over in England.
Yeah.
And we finally went to England and, you know, they were requesting other songs like, wow, we didn't know that was, we were told that the song had made number one over there, but you know, it still was hard for us to, well, since it wasn't number one here, to feel the same thing for that song like we did Twist and Shout.
But Motown had a very different way of making records, I think, than you guys were used to. What was that like, transitioning to that kind of like
We learned
factory?
A lot from Motown and producers like Holland and Dozier, you know, and we watched how they worked and we learned that, you know, their scheme of working. Smokey was there and the other producers. And when we left Motown, I recorded the song It's Your Thing. And that was the second time we did our own label, T-Neck Records, here in New York, with Neil Bogart and Buddha Records, the distributor. And It's Your Thing, and I think it sold about 5 or 6 million singles. It's your thing. It's your thing. Do what you wanna do now. I can't tell you. And we was off to the races. Now we were off to the races in a different manner. We had our own big band, and you know, and the band that played on Isher Thing, and we traveled with them.
Including your brother on bass. He was like 18 or something then, right? He was a kid.
Yeah, my brother, I don't know, I think he was 16 or something. And he played bass on there, you know, and later on he went from drums, bass, to the guitar. You
wow.
Know? Yeah.
I wanted to ask about It's Your Thing in particular. When I talked to, have you ever heard of The Last Poets?
Last Poets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I met one of The Last Poets, he's Abby O'Doon, he said, hey, you know, when I first moved to Harlem, and I guess right around the time It's Your Thing came out.
I went to Harlem and I walked around, and the time it was during the same time that the Isley Brothers had out a piece called It's Your Thing, Do What You Wanna Do. Yeah. I can't tell you who to sock it to. Well, the line that I was hearing when I was walking around Harlem was, what's your thing, brother? And brother said, oh, well, I'm a Black Panther, or I'm a Muslim. And so then I realized that, oh, thing is like a revolutionary pronoun. You know, it wasn't like, what's your thing? I work for DuPont, or I work for Dow Chemical, you know? And right. It's like, what is your thing in relationship to the movement,
yeah.
You know?
And I was just wondering what, you know, it's your thing, what you guys were thinking about when you first wrote it.
That was the expression, people were doing their thing. That, you know, everybody saying, man, do your own thing, you know? And I heard that expression so many times, and then when I said, and Wilson Pickett had out the record, no, Wilson Pickett, Johnny Taylor, Who's Making Love to Your Old Lady.
Why you lying, cheating on your woman, that is something you never even thought of, not coming to making love to your old lady, while you out making love.
And so, it's your thing, do what you want to do, and don't let me, I can't tell you who to sock it to. If you want me to love you, maybe I will. Believe me, woman, it ain't no big deal. You need love just as bad as I do. It makes me no different who you give your thing to. It's your thing. Do your thing, you know.
That's great. I never thought of so you viewed it almost like an answer to that, who's making love to your old lady.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was like when you were recording that and you're just like, let's just keep going. We don't have to make this radio length anymore. We're not at Motown. Was that like a freeing thing?
Yeah, you know, the record, like you said, the record, Who's Making Love, it was so big, you know, it was, too, and especially in, you know, I don't know, we lived in New Jersey then, and that's all you could hear on WRL. They would play this record till, you know, and so I wanted to have a hit like that, you know, I said, man, when we did, It's Your Thing became even bigger than that.
To move backwards for a second, I know your biggest hit at Motown was obviously The Stalled Heart of Mine.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to ask you just about, since that song has lasted so long and been such a classic, what was it like singing it? What were you thinking about singing it? Why do you think that performance has lasted?
Well, you know, we had a lot of songs that lasted like that. And I was able to do it again with Rod Stewart. We had a song called Nobody But Me that I wrote. Nobody can do the twist like I do. It's new. It's a commercial now.
No, 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 no,
no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no, in England, had a number one record on it.
Nobody can do the
singing
like I do. Nobody can do the
hey.
Like I do. Nobody can do like I do. Nobody can do.
I look at that song on the commercials. This song, man, we've earned a ton of money on it. And so, wow, you know, everybody, people here, a lot of people don't even know that we had that song or that I wrote that, you know.
Yeah, and you kind of took a little, jab might be the wrong word, but a little kind of fun with a lot of the white rock groups that covered your songs. Yeah. When you did the Giving It Back record.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons we did Giving It Back. Neil Bogle, I say, hey, why don't you guys do this? You know, that's why we did it, yeah.
Which was, for our listeners who don't know, that album was a cover of covers of popular rock songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, love the one you're with.
Well, there's a road in a fisted glove, and the eagle flies with the dove. And if you came with the one you love, honey, love the one you're with. You got to love the one you're with. You got to love
in Ohio.
I seen 10 soldiers, I hear them coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. Four dead in Ohio. Four dead.
Yeah. Was Love the One You?
Yeah, that was on that record, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I would be, you know, remiss if I didn't talk about, you know, the 3+3, which is maybe is my favorite album of yours.
3+3, yeah.
Why make the brothers official members at that point?
All right, at that point, you know, they were really playing that instrument, you know, and they were real, you know, we said, well, what are we gonna do now? We wanna be self-contained. We wanted to be a group to play their own instruments and sang, and maybe we still needed to carry a drummer with us. But, you know, we had our bass player, and we had the guitar, and we had keyboards. And with the drummer, we could do everything we felt right at that time. And that's what we did. And although my brother Ernie played drums on all of the records and guitar, from the second record we did, Live It Up on, Fight to Power and all. He played the drums first, then he'd go, you know, since we had so many tracks to work with, you know, that's what we would record, because the feeling on the drums was very important to us, you know, just like guitar and just like a bass, you know, we just didn't want no any drummer, just hitting the drums. We wanted the drummer to know exactly where we were going with the feeling. And he especially knew because he was writing a lot of the song.
You know, the iconic song from that record is That Lady. Can you talk a bit about writing that? Was that about any lady in particular? Or?
Well, I wrote that song first. I don't know what year it was. I think this was before Jimmy was with us. And we recorded on, I think, Atlantic.
Who's that lady? Who's that lady? Beautiful lady. Who's that lady?
And then we did something, I don't know what we did, you know, but I felt, hey man, that song is a hit. So when we started to do our thing later on in the first record, 3+3, which was distributed by CBS, you know, we added some different words and Ernie took a solo in the record, you know, and it was the first single.
Yeah.
Clyde Davis, yeah.
Yeah, it's a justly famous guitar solo. You mentioned Fight the Power, of course.
Fight the Power.
Yeah.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.
What did that phrase mean to you when you first used it?
Ernie wrote that song. I put in some lyrics to it. All this bullshit going down, you know. I said, I'm going to say this when I sing the record. And I'm not going to tell them, my brothers, I'm going to say it. I'm going to see what they thought. Because we had all this nonsense going. was what he wrote. And so I sang it, and I said, all this bullshit going down.
I try to play my music, this day my music's too loud. I try talking about it, I got to be run around. And when I roll with the punches, I got knocked on the ground by all this bullshit going down. Hey!
You know, and it really gave the feeling to the record. You know, like, this is this. You know, I tried to play my music. They say it's, my music's too loud. I tried talking about it. I got the big run around. And when I rolled with the punches, I got knocked on the ground with all this bullshit going down.
How did they react when they heard the curse?
Oh, man, they just spit out. They say, and we're going to keep that in there, you know. And so we played it for disc jockeys and everything. It wasn't like you were cursing. It was like you were just explaining to the max what it was all about. And that's all it was, you know. Spraying it, because, man, my mother, she you know, she really didn't believe in us cursing and that type of thing. But it's explained to the max about that record.
And about a decade and a half after that record, it was paid tribute to by Public Enemy. I was just hoping to get your thoughts when you, if you remember when you first heard that.
Yeah. You know, I started to sue them. But, you know, since they were my friends, I said, hey, man, let them go on.
Really? You thought about that?
I said, man, come on. That's just, you know, it's fight the power of that beast. I said, what do you think I said? I said, you know, it's the same lyric and everything, you know. But, hey, they were on CBS. It was on CBS, and that was the record, you know.
I had no idea. And you have been sampled a lot, obviously.
More than anybody in the industry.
I mean, you know, obviously.
James
Brown, maybe. But, you know, obviously Ice Cube,
yeah.
You know, used one of your tunes in It Was a Good Day.
Yeah.
Between the Sheets has been sampled by about 500 different people.
They have had hits too. In Between the Sheets, they have had the Brat. Open up and let the funk flow in from this nigga named Jay and his newfound friend. You know, of course, Biggie Smalls. To all the ladies in the place with style and grace. And somebody, Benita Applebaum, what was that group?
A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah. Somebody else, man.
Jay-Z used it a couple years back. I'm gonna really confuse y'all on this one. Follow. When them tops come down, chicks tops come down. Like when them shots come out, make cops come around.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite sample, you know, time you've been sampled? You're just like, oh, I dig this. Like, I really get it.
I like the Jay-Z record.
That's ignorant shit for our listeners.
Yeah, of course, Biggie just, he laid it out. I like Ice Cube on the Footsteps in the Dark, you know. It was a good day. You know, that's one of my favorites. Bones Thugs and, what's their name?
Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah, they had a big record that they sampled of ours, yes. Oh, bum, bum, bum.
boom, 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 boom.
Now tell me what you gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to run.
When judgment comes for you,
when judgment comes for you,
tell me what you gonna do,
but it ain't nowhere to hide.
When judgment comes for you,
'cause it's gonna come for you.
You know, you guys, this brings up something you guys, you know, you personally and your brothers as well have been incredibly successful at staying relevant in an industry for 7 decades, I guess? That's insane. Yeah. Can that really be it? Yeah, I guess 50, 60, yeah. Like, how do you manage to do that in a business where trends seem to change every week?
Man, we were so competitive, you know, in the beginning. You know, we wanted to be first at everything, and we feel like, starting off, we were like, I remember Lil Anthony was, he said, one of these days we're going to have a hit record, and after we get that hit record, we're going to stay on top for a long time. And that was Shout. And after that record, you know, the Lord blessed us, you know. And, hey, we love the business so much, and especially me, myself, just you know, hung around the business and what everybody was doing and what made a record a hit record, you know, that's what I wanted to do and that's what I wanted to sing, you know, and till now, right now, that's what this album is about now, you know, what's going on now, what should be going on, you know.
Who did you really learn that stuff from the most, do you think?
My oldest brother and Clyde McFadden and Billy Ward and the Dominoes, that was the first group. And then we, like I said, the spiritual group was Clara Ward, and then Donna Washington, and then, you know, just all, then all the singers that were popular, Sam Cooke, people like Jackie Wilson, all these people were friends of ours. And we hung with these people and got to know them. We moved to New Jersey because of Clyde McFadden, you know, and then Sylvia Robinson lived there, you know. And we were friends with them in coming up. Friends with Jackie Wilson, friends with Marvin Gaye, friends with Sam Cooke, you know. When I say friends, I mean, I really mean, you know, talking friends, you know, what you doing today, what you gonna do, you know. We knew what they thought, you know.
And you and Marvin, I remember reading, actually used to have little competitions of your songs.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, with Between the Sheets and Sexual Healing, who won?
Between the Sheets, you know, because, you know, like, everybody's, you know, hey, 20 people then recorded in Between the Sheets and had success with it. So I would consider that the winner.
Excellent.
Healing was a great song, though.
Yeah. One of my favorite songs of yours is definitely been Freedom. That one, and I was, did you write the words for that?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah. Does freedom mean something different to you now than it did in 68, 69?
Well, you know, that was a song now that you mention it, that should be a song I need to revisit that, because that should have been a smash, you know, Freedom, yeah.
What were you thinking about when you wrote it? Was there something
I wanted to say? Everything. I mean, you can do what you want to do, say what you want to say, live how you want to live, go where you want to go. That's free. That was my way of saying. Then you're free when you can do all these things, which you should be able to do.
I remember reading an interview not long ago with some of your engineers during the 3+3 period.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that you guys were such a self-contained unit. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to collaborate with the producer. I'm going to let the producer into rehearsals. I'm going to let them. There was none of that. It was just you guys came in, you know, 9 to 4:30, did what you were going to do and left.
Did the record, went to the record company, said, this is our first single, put it out. That was it. And that was the freedom that we had from having our own company, you know. To be able to record that type of way, go on tour when we felt like it, you know, sing when we felt like it. Like, now, we missed out on a lot of things by doing that, too. You know, we could have went to Europe a lot of times. We could have had a lot of awards that we didn't get. You know, Dick Clark would always tell us when he started the American Music Award, you know, you guys come on down and you're going to perform this year. We said, well, no, we're going hunting. And that was it. And so Earth, Wind & Fire got, you know, what they had. Earth, Wind & Fire had good records too, you know. But a couple of times we missed out. I guess we pissed Dick Clark off a little bit by doing that, by saying we were going hunting. He was a great friend of mine. You know, he responsible for me being able to join the yacht club there in California. And him and Ed McMahon, you know, you had to have somebody vote for you, you know. And so they spoke up for me and voted for me. And I had this 100-foot yacht, and I was able to park it and join the yacht club. So they were, you know, I could call on Dick Clark and at any time, and just he answered the phone. What do you want? What do you want me to do? You know,
that's incredible. I will literally get fired if I don't ask you about Contagious.
Oh, it's about to be some shit. How did I get into this? Should have never came home with this bitch.
You lonely, dirty woman, back to where you come from.
But baby, wait.
But wait, my ass hit the street. Your ass is grand. Can't you see two men are talking?
Brother,
I told you us to get to walking. Now I think y'all better leave this place, 'cause I'm about to catch a case. You're contagious.
It is my boss's favorite song in the whole world. And he wanted to know basically everything about it, but in particular that ending line about I'm going to catch a case, where that came from.
R. Kelly. Now, you know what? I have to admit this. When I sang this song, I didn't know what Catch a Case meant. And I would do it on the stage, and everybody would scream. Now, it would scream, you know, I said, what are they talking about? Catch a Case of Collapse? Are they talking about what? Catch a Case. Then I realized, then. It was a funny way when that came up to me and said, hey, man, catch a case for me. You catch a case in jail. You know, you catch a case, that means you got to go to jail. You caught this case. Maybe that should be something I shouldn't even tell, you know. And so, I mean, R. Kelly just laughed to his head, like, the, you know, just fell on the floor laughing at me, you know.
That's you did a whole bunch of records with him as the Mr. Biggs character.
Yeah, yeah. We did the record with Kelly Price.
This is Mr. Biggs.
How you doing, Mr. Biggs?
What the hell is going on?
What you mean, what's going wrong?
Kelly's telling me that you're sleeping with another woman.
Just because she sees me with her doesn't mean I'm sleeping with her.
Well, if you're not sleeping.
We did you know, she had a friend of mine out, and then she did the remix. And I introduced him to Kelly Price. He said, oh, man, I don't know. She's kind of fat. I said, look, man, this girl, I don't care about being fat. She can sing. She can do this. She can do that. And then he actually found out, you know, the record store, the original record was a hit. And he wrote that. He said, come on out here, man, and you got to sing this for it. So I came out to Chicago and listened to what he was talking about and did that part on our record, you know. And that was great. We did the download.
Oh, wow.
And then he did the remix of Download.
If Mr. Biggs comes in and catches, oh my goodness, he'll be freaked with looking at your pretty titties in the air.
Well, I went back to back and forth out to Chicago and fly out there. I mean, we record me walking in the studio like, and we use my this sound in the video. You know, I mean, he had mapped out the whole video how he wanted it, and you know, and I would open the door. Now, if you go back and watch that video, you'll hear me walking across the floor. That's the sound that he used. But we had so much fun doing those records, man. Those records was like, he had all his boys in the studio, and man, and everybody, it would be like a basketball tournament. You know, and because the records were so good, and you know, it were very easy for me to sing. You know, and I liked the singing that he did. And in fact, when I did the record Contagious, he wasn't in the studio. And when he came there, I had finished it with his Donnie Lyles. It's a musical, the guy that I guess he's his musical conductor. But we had finished it, and he had put a virgin down on tape at first, you know. And he was wondering, do you like it? I said, well, hit the bus here. And here, and he just, and the area, it just flipped out, you know. That was the good old days.
Yeah.
Good old days.
You said that he was like a son to you in some ways.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's a peculiar kind of person. You know, we did a whole lot of things together, and, you know, and at the time, he was going through his whatever, you know, that kind of interfered with it a little bit. But other than that, everything was smooth. You know, when he was going through his troubles, we kind of helped him out a lot, you know. And my wife had a group, her sisters, and he wrote some songs for them, and which was very successful. First single, Ice Cream.
Come and get a sip of my ice cream.
Some other things that he wrote.
So much of the late 70s and 80s Isley Brothers stuff are these really incredible ballads.
Let's be fair, and I think it's time we clear the air. You've been watching me, I've been watching you. You know I've been wanting to fool with you.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a great singer of ballads, and I was hoping you could tell our audience what goes into singing a ballad.
Feeling, you know, what do you feel, you know, in singing ballads for me, it was, you know, I had sang so many fast songs, the first Shout, Twist and Shout, The Son of Shout, and you know, a lot of people were just writing fast songs because that was what we would have the hit on. And so, moving over to do the ballads, when we had that first hit with, I think it was Hello It's Me or something like that. From there on, you know, every ballad I would do, like Footsteps in the Dark and all that, had a special meaning on it. And it was fun for me because now I get a chance to do what I really know, I really want to do, you know.
And let that falsetto go.
Yeah, it was like, it wasn't never like I was using a falsetto, you know, but a lot of people thought it was, you know.
It wasn't, though.
No, it wasn't. That was just the way I sung. I just sung soft when I hit those high notes, you know, yeah.
And a lot of people maybe don't know this, but you were not always the lead vocalist in the Isley Brothers.
Huh?
When you weren't always the lead vocalist in the Isley Brothers. When you were a kid, your brother Vernon was the original.
Well,
right?
No, it was always the lead.
Always
vocalist.
Lead?
Yes, always.
Okay. There aren't any, as far as I know, there aren't any recordings of Vernon, right?
No.
What did he sound like?
He would have sounded like.
Or he would have sounded, what he would have he sounded like if he had
He
lived?
Would have sounded something like me because, you know, he idolized me as a little kid, you know. He died when he was 11 years old. But he, you know, whatever I would do, it started off being my oldest brother, Kelly Isley. And Kelly and Rudolph, and they had their own style of singing. And that's when Clyde McFadden was out with the Dominoes. And so naturally, we all sang Clyde McFadden's song. And then we say, well, I sang it the best. You know, but they could sing, do the same thing, you know. But my type of feeling was the best, so, you know.
Yeah. And you have a new thing out, right? Dinner and a Movie.
She was so surprised when I walked up to her and said, hello, hello, girl, what's your name?
Oh, yeah.
Record. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, that's something I think everybody in meeting a girl, you know, or meeting someone they would like to, you know, walk up and talk to, they would just say, well, how about, you know, you going out, would you go out to dinner with me? And then after going out to dinner, would you go dinner and a movie? That's the thing now. Now, movies has always been the thing. But it's really, you know, they have theaters now. It's like you can go to some theaters and it's like you're going to a restaurant, especially in my hometown, in St. Louis. And it's amazing. They got a menu there, and you hit a button, and you sit right in your seat and order all this, the same thing you would order in a restaurant. And that's the way, that will be the way to carry a girl out or to meet a young lady and, you know, and the whole nine. And a lot of, you know, that is a clean, good way, you know.
Excellent. Well, I think unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been an unbelievable honor here with Ron Isley. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We wanted to revisit this interview for a couple reasons. First, I mean, come on, it's fucking Ron Isley. It's amazing. In addition to being a toweringly influential figure in the worlds of R&B and rock and roll, Isley is also extremely important in hip hop. Just the single song Between the Sheets has been sampled over 100 times by artists ranging, like he says in the interview, from Jay-Z and Big to Mac Miller, Big L, even Gwen Stefani. Between the Isley brothers and Ron's solo career, his work has been sampled well over 800 times. I was really glad that this interview got to cover the whole scope of his career, from singing gospel as a kid in the 40s all the way through his most recent record. I was especially psyched to get to talk to Ron about the 3+3 album, which is, as I mentioned, my absolute favorite work of his. I was so happy to get to revisit this show a year and a half after we first recorded it, and I hope you will be too. Join us next week when we kick off 2015 with the enigmatic Divine Styler. Divine got his start in the late 1980s as a part of Ice-T's Rhyme Syndicate crew, alongside people like Donald D and Everlast. In fact, he was an unofficial member of House of Pain for their overlooked but critically beloved third album, Truth Crushed to Earth Shall Rise Again. If you haven't heard it, it's pretty amazing. He released maybe the single weirdest hip-hop record up to that point, with 1992's Spiral Walls Containing Autumns of Light. It surprised people in that it was a rap record only by virtue of the fact that it was made by a rapper. It was actually something closer to an industrial, spoken word, rock and roll hybrid. He's coming off a 15-year hiatus with his new album, Death Mask. It's fantastic and just as weird as ever. If you like this interview with Ron Isley, make sure to find The Cipher on iTunes. From there, subscribe so that you'll never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us a review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the better chance we have of continuing to get great guests. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Cypher Show. Contact us there with feedback on the show, ideas for new guests, anything you'd want to talk about. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sitaro.
You know, I started to sue them.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
He was very talented.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
And then he did a remix of Download.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher. No, we celebrate the new year. So happy new year. I mean, it's fucking Ron Isley.
I think you need to at least say Ron in case you live in a fucking cave.